my brain is more or less totally blank. Spent some time at the beach where I could just be there with the ocean, feeling the ocean breeze, hearing the waves in the sun, also with the full moon. The moon was full when we were there. Absolutely spectacular nature. Gorgeous weather. I'm sorry for all you people who are suffering so much in the cold, in the snow. But for me, that nature, that was a resetting. I practically reset my entire consciousness, reset it into my natural energy, reset it into how I feel as a person. And it made me more in tune with my own energy, which is very important for me. And all in all, it was a very good experience. Now, some people would call that experience illusory. And Harshi wrote to me this morning saying that a good thing to talk about would be Maya, illusion. But I remembered a couple of times Prabhupada had talked about Maya as saying Ma-aya, or my nature, my energy. Now, I don't I haven't seen that in any, shall we say, dictionary or text. I think it's something that he described. So I have Harshi right now trying to find it in the Veda base, because I think that this way of looking at it is very interesting, very unique, and very relevant. I like the concept of illusion, not because I buy into the idea that these things are temporary, therefore they have no real existence or value, that anything that is not eternal is not real, especially the idea of Brahma Satyam Jagat Mithyam in Sanskrit, which is the way in which the Mayavadi school had discussed that only Brahman is truth and everything else is illusion. Everything of this world is illusion. I don't accept that. I also don't accept the way in which those who we know started to define illusion as anything that was not Krishna or not of the Supreme. Another definition of Maya is Shakti or Devi. I like that very much because Shakti is that energy which makes this Prakriti, this existence that we talk about, what it is. The quality of it, the way in which it works, the way in which it acts and interacts is within that realm. It is in the domain of Shakti. If you also remember from the Gita, we have Mother Nature, Shakti. Then we have the seed-giving Father, which is Lord Shiva. So this realm is a combination of Shiva and Shakti. Now, neither Shiva nor Shakti is illusion, and they are direct manifestations from Krishna. So, is illusion, this is my question now, is illusion something which is bad? In other words, do we have to call it bad? Do we have to call it negative? Is this required in our understanding of what it is? And do we have to think of it as an impediment, as an obstacle, as something which is stopping our evolutionary process? Now, I don't claim to have a perfect definition of all this. I don't even, in my particular discussion, wish to give scriptural proofs. I want to speak about this topic from the point of view of us, what we are, where we are, how we are, who we are, and what we are within. Now, I like definitions of illusion as that refer to the idea that it is something that we buy into. One of the problems of talking about illusion is that it very much depends on your opinion. It very much depends on how you see it, how you believe. It is not necessarily an absolute thing, something that has an absolute definition. And I'm going to discuss this. There are many illusions. That the real way in which we discuss illusion in the, shall we say, the philosophical circles, is that which we think is real, but is not real. Well, let's just think about that for a second. Does that mean if you are in a spiritual organization and you think it's real, that if you just continue like this, you're going to definitely go back to Godhead? What if you realize at one point you're not? Or what if you realize this is getting you nowhere? Was everything you did before illusion? I know this is not the way you usually look at it, but I'm getting somewhere with this. As you know, I spent a pile of years dedicated to spiritual development, dedicated towards facilitating the spiritual development of thousands of people. And sometimes people ask me about that, especially those people who were not in that. They ask me, do you feel that you wasted time? Was this a waste of your time? Do you lament? Do you regret? I say honestly and from the bottom of my heart, I do not regret. I do not lament. It was not a waste of time. I had really powerful, interesting experiences. Not all the time. A lot of the time I was either very stressed or incredibly bored. Boredom was a real tough one. But other than that, I don't regret. And I don't regret those things either. They were just part of it. People who are former or maybe still within that organization, they did something very interesting. They nullified my existence, that what I did was either bad or it had no value. So the memory of it has to just be erased. What I said cannot have any value because I have no spiritual understanding. Now, I think that's very interesting because now we are doing what's called transferal of the present into the past. That we are now defining the present or defining the past according to the present. And we nullify all that took place. Now that seems to me to be illusion. And that's why I don't say like I regret or it wasn't real or it had no value to me. Because I know what it was then. There were things I didn't like even then. I saw problems even then. So those things I continue to have my opinion on. But my life, my actions, my words, they just fine as they were. It was an experience that led to the present experience. I see no reason to turn the past experiences into illusion to justify or serve my understanding of the present. In fact, that would be a grand illusion. Just like, for example, we do things in the past. We have done things which we regret. So we look back into the past and we say, I did that thing, and that thing was bad, and we condemn ourselves for doing that bad thing. And we find that this is something we embrace, that we have to either apologize or we have to feel that pain of having done something bad. We have to feel that disturbance. We have to embrace it and have some maybe guilt to cleanse ourselves of, or we think that way, of what was done. Okay, we can have regrets. But when we did what we did, we thought that was the best thing to do at that moment. We made a decision that this is what we shall do at that moment. Now, if we have no faith in ourselves, we look back in the past and condemn ourselves for what we have done. We condemn ourselves for what we have done. We have no faith, and so we are judging ourselves. And when we have faith in ourselves, we look back into the past and see things that we don't feel good about. And we look at it with understanding. We analyze it. What does it mean? Why is it so? Why is it the way it is? What happened? What was the reason? You look at the situation. You try to understand it. You try to incorporate it into the circumstances of the time, the situation of the time, your particular development. And you see how you were then, and you see how you are now. In other words, there's a connection between the then and the now, a kind of like a referral between the then and the now, a interactivity. And this interaction between our vision and analysis, our understanding of our experiences in the past, in the context of our present consciousness, it that gives us such a great growth. Just like we understand how failure is the pillar of success, this means that that which we have done, our experiences which were failures, these things formulate an understanding in us how not to make the same mistake. Now, what is life right now? Is there any value whatsoever in considering that my experience right now is an illusion? What would be the value of seeing my present experience as an illusion? How could I possibly live if all of my experiences are illusion? Well, I can't. So therefore, disciplines say your experiences, if they are in a certain context, are not illusion. Like if your food is offered and if what you say is related to God, what you do is a service to God. But that's a very relative thing. Sometimes people do things in the name of God that actually is counterproductive to what perhaps God wants. Maybe you do something in the name of God, I don't have to give examples, and it is actually not what God wants, even if your guru told you to do it, or perhaps your authority told you to do it, or you transform what it was in your head to make some adjustment. Later on, you understand that it was wrong. So then, was it all illusion? Or was the process of coming to understand that every moment is reality and that one must choose at every moment what one feels is best? What is the actual manifestation of one's essence? In other words, is it more of a reality to do what you are told or to follow some authority, some scripture or some guru or some process, even if you run the risk of doing something incorrect that you will judge later on, because now you don't know that, but later on, and then you will nullify your whole past, is that, because it's a risk, you know, more a valuable way to do it, or a more real way to do it, than to right now, right here, in this moment, embrace that moment, embrace the energy of this moment, and choose what to do, experiencing the moment. After all, that's what everyone does anyway, whether they know it or not, because it's also our choice to follow somebody else. It's our choice to follow somebody else even when we don't think it's right. You're told what to do. You don't want to do it. You don't feel good about it. You still do it because you choose to do so. Is that more real, quote unquote, than choosing what to do in full awareness of the moment? Actually, these things are, on one level, the same. Functionally, procedurally, one is doing what one wants to do in the moment. But one does it because one thinks one is supposed to. The other does it because one has decided, based on one's own experience of the moment, of what to do. Which is illusory? I'm not very eager to start using the word illusion. I would say, which of these ways of action are more real? Which of these ways of action have power? Which of these ways of action facilitate my growth, facilitate my evolution? Now, this is very important. This is not only very important, but this is actually a, shall we say, decision. When you answer that question, when you figure out which of these, it's a decision that can give one enormous power, or which can restrict one. I say that when one gives up one's decision-making power, and I mean to say in the sense of doing what we feel is right at the moment, it restricts us. We hand what we are to another. And when we embrace that responsibility, it makes us much stronger. Think of it again. Let's talk about now when we have embraced that responsibility. Look back into the past and embrace the responsibility for what we have done in each of those situations and circumstances which we might condemn ourselves for. Embrace that responsibility. Look into the past. Embrace it. Embrace the decisions we made. Analyze them. Why did I do what I did? What was the experience? What was the environment? Why did I feel the way I felt. One of the interesting things about hypnosis, for example, just popped into my head this thought. If you, for example, just do some psychotherapy or you just talk to your friends about something you did in the past, you don't really experience the environment, the ambience, the package of the feeling of that experience. You are speaking about that which is describable from the experience. And what's interesting about that is not everything is describable, at least not in words. How do you describe a feeling? You can use some words, but the struggle of trying to use the word to describe the experience puts so much emphasis on the mental process where you are struggling to describe the experience that you forget the experience itself to a large extent. Whereas in the hypnotic state, one immerses in the experience. I think it's so interesting how the mind is such a fabulous filter process. It's a process that's continuously filtering. When you are trying to remember something, the mind is even filtering the way we remember it and how we remember it. When you make a decision on how you want to see something, the mind serves you by filtering out those things you don't want to see. Because you have made a decision, you have created an understanding. So you filter, your filter process is on. Fantastic. Whereas in hypnosis, the whole point of the hypnosis is, and this is the same in meditation now. Meditation and hypnotic state have similarities. I mean, after all, when we do guided meditations, there's an enormous similarity between the two states. So in that, let's call it the deeply meditative state or the state of hypnotic trance, the filter of the mind is removed. If you want to talk about an illusion, the filter of the mind could be considered one because it prevents us from seeing what is. The idea is that when you filter, you don't want to see what is. So that is a bit of an illusion, but it's an illusion that we choose to create. In other words, we choose to create this illusion, we embrace it. We program the mind to filter in that way, and therefore it's our choice to have that kind of a mind. I mean, because after all you have to do is to want to see things in a different way. You know, a lot of times in our discussions here, you'll hear me say, let's look at it completely in another way. In other words, I enjoy to discuss things which we assume to be a certain way completely from the other point of view. In English, this is called being the devil's advocate. It means basically that you look at it from a totally different point of view, a way in which you would never expect or you would not agree with or whatever. I like to look at something and say, what is this thing? What is it really? What if it was like this? I like to see things from a very different perspective because I don't like the idea of being an illusion. Or let's say like this, I don't like the idea of limiting my perception, limiting my awareness. You know, like when we did all these discussions about mystics, mystic spiritualism, multidimensionality. The whole secret behind this is seeing in an unexpected way, seeing in a way in which one is not accustomed, seeing differently than the normal vision. And I don't even mean that you have to develop some different kind of eyes or different kind of awareness. Uh-uh. Same eyes, same awareness, but looking for something else, or just being open to something else, instead of filtering it out because it doesn't fit within the expectation. So you just open, you just allow, or you consciously look in another way. You know, sometimes I've done sessions with people, private sessions, and really what I'm doing is I just feel their energy. Their energy speaks to me. It never lies. It tells me so many things. The first thing I see is what they want me to see. So I say, okay, they want me to see this. I accept that. Then I just feel. I feel their energy. Is there a difference, I ask, between what they want me to see and what I feel? If so, then there's more work involved. If not, I'm very impressed with this person because they are very much in touch with themselves. And they know why they're sitting in front of me, and therefore they want me to deal with the real thing. If not, this indicates something that needs work. So I look beyond, in back of, kind of like you lift up a cover and peek in, or you look around a corner, look underneath, look above, ask some of their associates or guides or whatever. Do some investigative work, research. So this looking in an unexpected way, consciously, is a power. The power really is that you feel and you allow things to come to you. You don't filter them. Like you sit in front of a person and you might think, I don't understand anything about this. I can't see anything special. I don't feel anything special. So this is a reverberation. If one has the capacity to feel, one allows and attracts magnetically the transmission of the other person and accepts it and just observes it, feels it. So one works with it without filtering out because you expect it to be this way. So the hypnotic meditative state is a mystical experience in the sense that the filtering is removed, because the idea of the state is to set the mind aside, set aside all the filtering mechanisms, and just experience the energy of it. And then to feel the memory in its environment that it was experienced, without the filtering of it. Then there is a real value to working with the past. And one can see how the past contributed to and nurtured, cultivated the present. So let's see this in terms of illusion, because we started off speaking about that. Well, what really is the illusion here? I would propose the illusion is the filter. I would propose all of this is reality. It is the nature of Purusha Prakriti. It's the nature of Shiva Shakti. It is not an illusion. It is not that they are creating this as a theater for us. It is their nature. We are living within it. So the illusion is not the experience. The illusion is the filter we put on our perception. Let's put that into a real example. For example, let's say I'm doing something which is harmful to me. Self-destructive behavior. This idea I might have that this is beneficial is illusory because it's a destructive thing. That which is destructive to me is not beneficial. Of course, there are certain things when you destroy them, it's beneficial, like you have a tumor and it's destroyed by a laser or whatever. It's beneficial. Yes, that's different. But I mean when it's a self-destructive behavior. Let's say somebody's an alcoholic or a drug addict or some kind of addict or is doing something or destroying their personal relationships or harming themselves somehow by eating badly or too much or whatever. The idea that this is beneficial is a destructive idea. And that's the illusion. After all, you look at nature. Nature has a natural order. There's a natural way in which things work and a way in which things don't work. So our bodies have this. Look at nature. Nature's got everything in order, your body. So when you're dealing with your body in such a way that you're doing things which are contrary to the biophysical, biological, physiological, biochemical nature of the body, you are harming it. When you're dealing with your mind and with your energy in a way which is contradictory to what you are causing distortion. That's a harm. So the reality is we can resonate quite well with this world if we accept it for what it is. And when we think of it in another way, that we filter, if we think it's not real or we refuse to see what it is, that's illusion. It's harmful to us. So if we were to take the idea of illusion as that which is not, then to a large extent, that's under our control. It's under our control to say that I choose to filter and look at it this way, which may be destructive, which may be harmful to me. I choose that. Or we can choose to say, I shall see it for what it is in a harmonic resonance with what I am, fully trusting in the infinite wisdom of Shiva and Shakti, that they have given this combination of Prakriti Purusha in a perfect balance, which is even confirmed in this Om Purnamadah Purnamidam verse, that there's a balance. Everything is there. The concept of rejecting this world as Maya is very much in line with Mayavadi philosophy. Jagat Satyam. The idea, Brahma Satyam. That's why I canceled. Brahma Satyam, Jagat Mithya. My opinion is Jagat Satyam, Brahma Satyam, but that's another thing. No, Brahma Satyam, Jagat Satyam. That's my opinion. But the idea that Brahma Satyam, the world, only makes sense from the point of view of spirit, and Jagat, this world, from the Prakriti point of view, is illusion. And I've seen unlimited spiritualists embrace that idea, be they calling themselves Vaishnavas or otherwise. They reject this world. They reject their bodies. They reject their feelings. They reject their families. They reject their children. They reject their capacities. And that's illusion. Okay, for sure, what we experience now is temporary in its particular form. But the energy of the experience is not. The feeling of the experience, the decision and choice I make, the way in which my essence, my energy, interacts, perceives, grows, is not temporary. Okay, the way my energy interacts and perceives all that is taking place in my experience around me, this is reality. This is a reality that continues with us forever. It is a reality that is part of what we are forever. It is not something temporary. It is not something that becomes different when we go to the spiritual world. It is not something that is ever different. No matter where we are, what we do, who we are, what body we're in, whether we're in Goloka Vrindavan or we're in down the street from where we live now, that particular essence and energy of what we are, and the particular essence and energy of how we are, is that which is reality. It is that spiritual essence. And again, the illusion, if we wish to use that word, is when we think of the reality in which we live as something which is different than the what it is. In other words, instead of accepting what it is and working with that, we filter it out and accept only some aspect of it, or see it through a twisted lens, see it through a twisted awareness or a twisted perspective, a distorted one, one which does not want to accept it as it is. Now, okay, there's another problem here, which is that to have an awareness of seeing things as they are, one has to have a lot of experience. And not only that, you can never see everything as it is. First of all, people cheat. People distort. People try to present themselves in a way in which is not so. And so you're dealing with all of this deception and treachery. But that is also part of this nature. The facility is there. So one should not just filter out. One should see, as we had talked about before, how someone presents themselves and feel someone's energy. And when there's a difference between the two, we should try to determine why. What is the cause of the reason between the difference that is created in that difference between what they present and what they are? What is it going on? Because then we won't be as easily cheated because we are accepting what is. So one of the challenges is to have the ability to know what is. That's where the mystical spiritualism comes in. For example, if something bad happens to us, we can choose to lament about it, we can choose to think it's something terrible, or we just accept it and wait and see, or deal with it and see where it goes. In other words, it happened. All right. This is what it is. Okay. How do I deal with it? What is my appropriate response? How is it attempting to manipulate me or change me? If it is something that is good, if it is something that I can embrace, if it is something helpful, I shall do so. If it is not, then I shall not. I shall always make that choice based on a perception that is not dictated by illusion. In that sense, this world ceases to be an illusion, it becomes an arena within which we develop, in which we utilize our very specific spiritual, essential, energetic awareness and consciousness. And then we start to also look beyond the everyday interaction, because why should we only be stuck in the everyday interaction here? Why? Why should I be forced to be stuck in the way others present themselves to be? Why should I be forced to be stuck in the way the world presents itself to me, with all its insane politics, with all of its insane economic and financial exploitation and deception? Why can't I simply choose how to relate with the energy around me? I can move into different dimensional spaces. I can travel perhaps to even other planets. I can connect with other beings wherever they may be. I can connect across the globe. I can have my connections and my mystical experiences wherever they may be. I can stand in the temple of the deities and connect to them so deeply and go wherever they are, wherever we go. You understand? The idea being, this illusion is something we embrace, we choose to accept, we hold on to, because it serves something in us we need to have served. Maybe we're afraid. Maybe we are full of fear of how we might fail, how we might be harmed, or how we might not succeed. So we surrender ourselves. We surrender our personal directing our life because we don't have enough faith that we can do it. Now, we're talking about adults here, not children. And this is, in essence, illusion. That we do not accept ourselves. We do not accept what we are. We do not accept who we are. We do not accept our existence. We do not accept our power. We disempower ourselves for the sake of some idea or some ideal which does not serve our interests. It is something which works against our best interests. And therefore, I say, let's make a rebellion against this. Let us revolt. Let us rebel against the insistence of existence that we be in Maya, illusion. This very insistence, when we accept it, is the specific mechanism by which we enter into illusion. That is wild when you think about it. That this insistence that it be so, and our acceptance of that, is the very reason we're so. Even if you're in a spiritual group or some religion and you're again and again hearing how you are in Maya because everything is Maya and everything you see is Maya, it is the cause of our being cemented in Maya. Because we believe it, we accept it, we embrace it. We embrace the illusion. We hold it dearly to ourselves because we value what we've been told. We value it. I say, value yourself. Value yourself because you and only you can see. You and only you can understand. You and only you can break that cycle. Maybe create Satyayuga by simply refusing to accept the illusion which is being very much pounded into us. Simply say no. After all, isn't that how all these great personalities of the past, even these great Russian philosophers who were in jail somewhere, or even like Nelson Mandela in South Africa, or others who had been imprisoned and were pushed into submission because their message or their vision did not serve the demands of an exploitative government? This is factually and a good example, because you see how these people refused to be dominated, refused to give up their awareness, refused to give up their perception, despite such incredible pressure upon them. They refused. They held their right. They held their responsibility to themselves and embraced it. And that's what kept them alive. That's what gave them the strength to overcome their oppressors. So if you want to say, what is Maya? You might also say, is Maya is the conglomerate of everybody who has embraced it, bought into it, who have said, this is what it is. And so you accept that. And because of the power of the people in that, it is a very powerful force. I suppose somebody who was living very peacefully in the forest wouldn't think like that, because they wouldn't have been programmed like that. They would just be living their life, dealing with every single thing that is in front of them according to what it is, because not only is their survival dependent on it, but their interest in life, their interaction with life, can only be when there is an appropriate interaction, appropriate catalyst and response, a stimulus that they can appropriately respond to. So I suppose I could have spoken in much more detail in a better way about this subject was I not so hindered by the translation, which basically destroyed my capacity to think when my capacity to think was anyway weakened by the fact that I didn't really have anything to talk about, because brain was clean. Technology wasn't putting a spike in my head. Right now, it feels very good just to speak in English and not care about a translator, even though I see the line going up and down. So I suppose Maha's back and translating. I'm not listening to him right now. And I don't know how he could have possibly translated so rapidly what I said. But it's kind of, for me, it's like, you know, you've been running with shoes with weights in them, and now I don't have them on, so I can just fly through this discussion. But I hope that something about this discussion has benefited you. I know that it has been interesting for me to revisit this topic of illusion, because it was basically the reason I left ISKCON, when I decided that the thing that was being defined to me as the reality in the illusion, which by the very nature of my position I had to embrace to facilitate, was the illusion itself, not the reality. So I wished to reach out to the reality, wished to embrace the reality, but the only way to do it is to take back my power, take back my capacity to say, this is right, this is wrong, I want this, I desire that, I do not want to be connected to this. It's a choice, it's something which is very powerful. When you say, no, it's me now that shall take responsibility from me. because I know no one else will. Maybe others will help just as I help others. But still, it's my responsibility. What I do, how I think, how I decide. I have to have the right to say, I accept this, I do not accept that. Because only then will I be able to perceive, to be aware, and to amplify and expand and increase that awareness in a powerful, powerful way, to give me a capacity to find the divine, to reach out to the divine, to accept the divine. That's the only way to do it. That's what I have experienced. That's my opinion. If you just believe my opinion and put aside your own, that's useless. If you agree because, hey, you say, that's my experiences, my perceptions demonstrate the same thing, then go for it. Take back your power. Wherever it has been given away, just take it back. Because now it's important that groups of people stay together who think that way, who feel that way, who experience that way. Because that will be the real power of the future. You want to recreate that beautiful time? There's only one way to do it, and that's the way. Or at least that's the requirement, prerequisite to creating such a time. Not necessarily that it's sufficient, but it's necessary. It's a necessary prerequisite. Not sufficient, but necessary.